Good morning, Your Honors. Steve Lathrop on behalf of Mr. Calderon. I think I can do this in 10 minutes. What I'd like to do is point the court.
That would be a good idea since that's what you've got.
Your Honor, I'd like to start by pointing the court to four conclusions that the Court of Appeal reached, the California Court of Appeal reached, and show that the court, that those four conclusions were clearly erroneous by then going to the CalJIF jury instructions and also the argument of the prosecutor. On excerpts of record, page 544, this is the Court of Appeal opinion, page 17. The first conclusion that the California Court of Appeal reaches is that we conclude that the trial court should have given a modified version of appellant's proposed instruction regarding antecedent threats, and that it then states how it should have modified, the trial court should have modified that instruction, and it states that it should have modified it in such a way that it would have only applied to Montiel, that the threats wouldn't have applied to Perez. Perez didn't make the threats, but of course, in that July incident, Petitioner Calderon reasonably understood that that was Montiel that was driving the vehicle. So one, the manner in which the Court of Appeal concluded that the trial court should have altered the defense counsel's or modified the defense counsel's instruction was erroneous. And I'll get to that more clearly when I get to the instructions. The second, on page 545 of the excerpt of records, the Court of Appeal says, in view of the panoply of CalJIF instructions regarding self-defense, we conclude that it is not reasonably probable that an appellant would have obtained a more favorable result. Not true. And I'll explain that very concisely when we review the CalJIF instructions. Number three, the Court of Appeal.
The question isn't whether you like the way they decided California law, though, is it? The question is whether federal constitutional rights were violated when the jury was instructed on self-defense to a fare-thee-well. That's really the question, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. The question is, but in answering that question, we have to turn then to the instructions. And the problem with the instructions, if you look at the government's excerpt of record starting at page 3, we have instructions on self-defense of homicide. He was not charged with homicide. Count 4 was an attempted murder. And the rest of the charges, save one, were assault with a firearm. If you look at starting at page three of the government excerpts of record, CalJIF 5.10, and these are the ones that are cited by the Court of Appeal in saying that there was harmless error in failing to instruct on antecedent threats. Well, CalJIF 5.10 says homicide is justified and not unlawful when committed by any person who is resisting an attempt to commit a forcible or charges crime. There's no homicide here. Okay. That doesn't apply. I mean, next one. There's a forcible and a charges crime. That refers to homicide. Well, there's no homicide here. The next one, page three of the government's excerpts, talks about justifiable homicide and self-defense. And it talks about a reasonable person. Okay. We're not talking about the antecedent threats. Not only does this instruction, which is read, deal with.
Is it your argument then that the jury must have said to itself, oh, gosh, self-defense is only good as a homicide, but he only tried to kill people, and so it must not be any good as to that. Is that your concern?
The concern, Your Honor.
Due process concern.
The due process concern is that defense counsel presented solid evidence that Calderon had been threatened by Montreal.
We're on a different page now. You said a moment ago that the problem with this is that it refers to homicide. You know, the problems, too, you say. But, and in answer to my question, well, wasn't the jury instructed about self-defense to a fare-thee-well? And you say, oh, no, because it said homicide. So my question to you is your point that it's a due process violation because the jury may have said to itself, well, gosh, this guy didn't kill anyone, so I guess none of these instructions apply? Is that your point?
No, you're right. The point is that the instructions as a whole never gave meaning to Calderon's self-defense, to his defense of self-defense. It never gave meaning and never instructed the jury on the law of antecedent threats.
Did the jury ever express any confusion regarding that issue?
No, they didn't. But, Your Honor, but the way that the prosecutor argued the case, the State argued the law to the jury, it excluded antecedent threats as a self-defense. And
the, well, the question of the prosecutor's argument is not before us on the COA. What's before us is whether the instructions were wrong.
Right, and that's why I'm turning to the instructions.
The instructions do say, among other things, that to justify taking the life of another, now I realize this is taking the life, and he didn't quite manage that, but in self-defense, it must be so to excite the fears of a reasonable person placed in a similar position. A reasonable person placed in his position who decided to gun down somebody on the freeway because the person was allegedly blocking his exit, although he really couldn't have been, considering how the bullet entered, but that's neither here nor there. A reasonable person in his position includes what he knew, does it not?
Well, it would seem that it would, but the instructions are conflicting in that regard, because if you look at another instruction given to the jury, which is self-defense against assault, and there were, most of these were assaults with a firearm, one was the attempted murder, at Excerpt of Record 6 of the Government Excerpt of Record, it reads, it is lawful for a person who is being assaulted to defend himself from attack if, as a reasonable person, he has grounds for believing and does believe that bodily injury is about to be inflicted upon him. That's not correct. That's under the his defense was that he personally felt apprehension. And the California Supreme Court has ruled that self-defense looks to not the because justification does not depend upon existence of actual danger, but depends upon appearances. That's the California Supreme Court. So the due process violation here is that
it's not actual danger, but it's appearance to a reasonable person. It's true the courts have said that you can consider what the person subjectively knew, but the test is objective, is it not?
No, it's not.
Well,
no, it's not, Your Honor. I've cited on page 11 of the opening my opening brief the California Supreme Court's decision in People v. Menifee at 13 Cal 4th, 1055, and they explicitly state that it's not. It's the appearance. Now, the jury may find that the appearance, it's clearly the appearance. There's just no question about it. Self-defense centers, right? Let me just.
Appearance, it's there. To whom? Is
not to the victim, but to the defendant. And the flaw that the courts.
No, you're suggesting that if I write now, it appears to me that you. It appears to me that you're about to kill me right this moment, because I don't like the way you're holding your hand toward your coat. I can pull out a gun and gun you down because it appears to me that way. I suggest to you that's not the law of California any other place.
Well, I'm not suggesting that it's a whimsical.
Suggesting that because the thing that makes it non-whimsical is that it has to so I have to be reasonable.
It has to appear so
to a reasonable person knowing what I know. I know that you put your hand here and I decided to gun you down. A reasonable person would not do so. That's called objective.
I agree with what the court is saying. I'm not trying to. I agree with what you're
well,
saying.
Then what's statement wrong with the standard but, that tells the jury?
Well,
that?
In reading Government Exhibit 6. CALJIC 5.30, it uses both an objective and a subjective standard. And it's not the law that Calderon has to have reasonably believed that bodily injury was about to be inflicted upon him. Under California law, given the death threats that he had received from Montreal, he has a right to act more quickly in response, more quickly than an otherwise reasonable person.
I didn't say otherwise reasonable, why wouldn't that be reasonable? If he received threats and he really believed this, a jury could find that was reasonable.
I think the short answer is twofold. One, the instructions talk about homicide. I think that if you have to believe that the jury followed the instructions, you have to believe that they disregarded these homicide instructions.
Right.
And especially the homicide.
But we're on the reasonable point now. Is it what's wrong with telling them that it's got to be? Reasonable. You gave an example of why it would be reasonable.
Well, I think the way the prosecutor, the state, argued the evidence and argued rather the instructions to the jury, the way the prosecutor argued those instructions, it did not focus. He argued that the jury instructions in some, and I can cite where that has occurred, in some he argued that it's not a matter of what Calderon believed. In the
prosecutor's argument is not part of the COA before us.
But
and prosecutor's argument is a question of prosecutorial misconduct.
But it's not
a question of whether the jury was properly instructed.
Yes, Your Honor. But in looking at in this Court in reviewing the Kaljic instructions and how those – how the jury may reasonably have understood those instructions, I think we can look to the prosecutor – the State's argument. And certainly this is how the State interpreted the instructions. And if the State interpreted the instructions in that way, I think that's good – good evidence that the jury may have reasonably. And I think that's the ultimate question, is how did the jury reasonably understand these Kaljic – all the instructions, the panoply of instructions given.
Okay. Counsel, your 10 minutes is up.
I'll save the excess for it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Deputy Attorney General Ana Duarte for Respondent. As the Court has pointed out, whether a constitutional violation has occurred in this case depends on whether what the evidence presented was and what the overall instructions were. In this case, conceitedly, the trial court failed to instruct an antecedent threat. That was error, but it was not one of a due process or constituting a due process violation. Petitioner was not in any way prevented from presenting a meaningful defense, a thorough self-defense. The instructions, I counted at least 13 of them that went to self-defense. And they did talk about the reasonable person standard, which is what the California law provides for. But specifically, the instructions themselves told the jurors to consider what petitioner or what a reasonable person in petitioner's situation or under similar circumstances with similar knowledge, what that person would do or would if that person would be justified in exercising in acting in self-defense. I think that petitioner's argument that somehow the instructions would have led the jury to believe that they could not use the antecedent threats or the prior conduct between petitioner and Mr. Montiel is clearly incorrect and not supported by the record. The petitioner was allowed to present the evidence of the two prior assaults that petitioner allegedly observed Mr. Montiel inflict upon two other people. They also heard evidence of a prior freeway chase of petitioner. They also heard that Mr. Montiel had admitted to law enforcement that petitioner had a reason to be afraid of him. All that evidence, in conjunction with the instructions given to the jury regarding self-defense, would have led them to consider properly his self-defense theory, and clearly they just rejected it. And if we even reach the arguments of counsel for any reason, it would be, I think, simply if this Court were to decide, well, yes, there was a constitutional error, let's look to see if there was – if it had a substantial and injurious effect on the jury's verdict. And in this case, I would subject or submit to you that both the prosecution's and the defense's closing arguments really pointed to the jury being able to consider all of the evidence. I would especially point you to defense counsel's argument, which mentioned Kaljic 5.51 at least six times.
Well, you know, I'm not sure why on a question of instructional error we get involved with what attorneys happen to say, particularly when it, I don't recall in this case especially, but normally judges say don't pay too much attention to the attorney's statements of the law. But if you really want to go there, what the prosecutor said wasn't exactly accurate, was it? About we're not interested at all in his subjective thoughts. We are somewhat interested in what he thought, aren't we?
On what petitioner thought, you mean?
Excuse me?
You're asking we are interested in what petitioner believed? Is that what the question is?
We're interested in what's in his mind to some extent, or what might be in his mind, are we not?
Yes, but if you look to one of the last things that the prosecutor said in rebuttal, it told the jury, when you determine what a reasonable person in the same or it directed the jury to think about what a reasonable person in the same or similar circumstances would believe that the assault is likely to inflict great bodily injury. I mean, that's a direct quote taken out of context, but it is – he did say that in rebuttal, and I think he was pointing the jury to all of the evidence or all of the information that Petitioner had when he acted on June 21st, the first incident, the second incident on the freeway, and then when he acted in the counts against Mr. Perez, which were in July. And as the Court says, usually you give less weight or maybe no weight to what counsel has said, and the greater weight is to what the judge has instructed, because we presume that jurors do follow the Court's instructions. Well, in this case, the self-defense instructions should be broadly construed to have included the jury's ability to consider all of those prior contacts between Petitioner and Montiel. As the district court found, and I'll quote, the instructions as a whole focused the jury's attention on the circumstances of the confrontation between Petitioner and Montiel, which, of course, included the prior threats on Petitioner's life and safety. I don't know how much more clearly it can be stated the self-defense instructions in this case were sufficient to present Petitioner's theory to the jury. That they rejected it is another matter. Because unless the Court has any other questions, I would simply like to conclude by saying that Petitioner was, because he was allowed to present a full and meaningful defense, there was no constitutional violation. Therefore, you don't even reach the Brecht standard of prejudice. And if you did, then you'd have to consider all of the evidence before them, all of the instructions given, and find that he's not entitled to habeas relief, and therefore the district court's judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case just argued will be submitted.